It's my pleasure now to introduce Pat Elder, an activist from Maryland who's been doing research, writing, and organizing for peace and demilitarization for many years. Pat began his activist career with high school counter-recruiting projects. He's currently a writer and blogger for Truth Out, Citizen Exposure, and other media. He's partnering with Wolf U.S. to link the environmental damage perpetrated by the U.S. military with threats to public health and communities around U.S. bases here and abroad. We're asking Pat to speak for about 10 minutes about his counter-recruiting project and experience, and then we'll take a couple of questions. And after that, we'll move on to his research and writing about the really dangerous firefighting foam the military continues to use on its bases, and follow that with more Q&A. So as he's speaking, try to think of good questions. Pat, we have a lot of branches represented on this call. I welcome you to the One Wolf call.
Well, thank you. But wait, this isn't the Elliot Abrams support group? Maybe I misdialed.
No, I think you got the right call.
Okay. Well, 10 minutes on countering recruitment. I'd have to say that my approach is a top-down approach. So I don't talk to kids, you know. I haven't really gone into the high schools for about 15 years now. So, you know, my approach is to try to pass legislation or try to change administrative policies regarding the access that the military has to our children in our public schools. And we've had some success, you know. We've passed laws in Maryland, and we've passed laws in Hawaii and New Hampshire, and we may be passing laws in Maine, and we have changed policies in more than 2,000 schools on various issues. So it is a great angle to pursue, and it's you know, it's quantitative, which is fun. You know, you can actually not just go crazy with all of this madness. You can quantify your success, which is a big deal for me. I would say that there's four avenues of resistance as far as the military domination of our schools is concerned. And so I would address them in the order of how low that fruit is for picking. And that's what I'm all about, man, you know, just trying to, you know, work as smart as possible in the waning years. You know, it's like the fourth quarter for me. I'm a little upset right now, you know, and I certainly don't want to relay that sense. But we, after 10 years of working this issue in Maryland, we finally got a bill submitted to ban lead ammunition in the public schools. Okay, that's all it does. It just bans lead ammunition. And as horrifying as that seems, we have 2,000 schools now with indoor firing ranges, and they're growing quickly. And they shoot pellets. They shoot .177 caliber pellets, you know, like the .22 is a little bit larger, except the pellets used in schools are CO2 fired, and they shoot a pellet at 600 feet per second, which would pierce somebody's temple, you know, at close range. But that's not really the issue. The issue is the lead. And but by comparison, the bullet that struck Reagan was traveling at 900 feet per second, and it was a .22. The issue is the lead. And rather than going after the JROTC, which ain't going to happen, or rather than, you know, arguing against the presence of the military in the school, which, you know, it's not going to happen, and rather than just arguing it philosophically, it's all for naught. But this lead thing is smart. But anyway, the bill was introduced on Thursday? It was introduced last Friday. And by Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, she yanked it because she was just clobbered with all kinds of negative responses. She did manage to get 36 Democratic co-sponsors, nobody from the Republican side. I told her, you know, as we worked together on this, she was going to get clobbered, you know, and it points to something I've known all along, which is that the military has minders and they look at legislation and, you know, they just jumped all over this. So these guys are sophisticated and they have us beat. So anyway, she's going to reintroduce the thing next year, hopefully when we can organize it a little bit better. That is one angle of resistance, fighting the JROTC program through the lead. And, you know, when they fire their gun, the lead deposits at the muzzle end of the gun. The pellet hits the target. It blows up. There's lead in the air. The Civilian Marksmanship Program, which basically regulates the four branches that run the JROTC Marksmanship Program, say you don't have to worry about ventilation systems, but you have different scientific evidence that says shooting pellets does create airborne particulate matter. And they've got all these regulations that basically the high schools don't pay attention to. The kids are tracking lead through their school. They're getting lead on their hands and their feet and their faces. And they're accessing the targets. They're not supposed to. They're supposed to use shoe covers. Hell, there's just all kinds of stuff. And we got it introduced in a state, and it lasted for 3 days. So we got a battle here. Another angle of resistance is military testing in the public schools. And right now, about 700,000 kids, you know, take this ASVAB, which is the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. It's the military's enlistment test, and they're in the schools, and they say it's a free public service, and they'll help your child, you know, figure out if he'll be a nice fireman or whatever in the hell he might be. But they use the 3.5-hour test to determine the cognitive abilities of the child. Now, they're all over it as far as social media is concerned. Man, they know that a guy's girlfriend doesn't want him to join. They know he drives a pickup truck, likes fly fishing, and Southern rock and roll. I mean, they know all that stuff before first call because they're on it, you know. But what they don't know is the cognitive abilities of the kid. Because they want to be able to figure out if this guy'd be a good tank commander, you know, or a guy that fixes tanks. I don't know. They want to test them all. And also you have high numbers of kids that can't pass the test to begin with. Again, it's the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And, if you pass the thing, you're at about an eighth grade level. As far as I can determine, I held Maryland licensure, you know, with an advanced professional certificate for 30 years. So I kind of have a sense on that stuff. So the state of New Jersey, a bunch of states now are awarding high school, credentials to give you a diploma if you can pass the ASVAB and you join. So that's pretty despicable. But the issue is student privacy. So the military doesn't tell schools. They don't tell kids. They don't tell parents. They test these children. They allow them onto a sophisticated website. But the whole time they're collecting information on the child's abilities. They also collect demographic information and they collect social security numbers. I got into it because I realized immediately that in the state of Maryland, it's illegal to collect social security number of a kid without parental consent. And it's probably the same in California or wherever in the heck you are. But anyway, that's two areas. The third is opt out. And, you know, in a nutshell, and hell, where am I time wise? Am I? How much time do I have left? 4 or 5 minutes?
You have about another 2 minutes, and we'll take quick questions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. The opt-out is it was passed by the Bush administration in 2001. And basically it says that that military recruiters have the right to get your kid's name, address, and phone number. But that you have the right to opt out from those lists. The problem is they didn't put anything in the legislation that says how the heck you're supposed to do that. And so throughout the country, most schools have not been very good at telling parents they have the right to opt out. And so in Maryland, I crafted legislation and we got it passed, you know. And so the emergency contact form, which is the only form that parents actually have to fill out every year, has a little box up at the top right-hand corner that says, hey, do you want your kid to information going to military recruiters, yes or no? And we're at about 90%. But we're the only state and nobody else has gotten close. But the military's on it now, so as soon as anything gets introduced, they'll send out their goons to shoot it down. But it's still worth a shot. And the last one has to do with access. And, you know, the law says military recruiters have the same access as college recruiters, but they get to chill in the lunchroom and they usually, spend quality time with the kids, hanging out in the parking lot and coaching football teams, things like that. So that's it. You know, four avenues of resistance in the public schools. Doesn't have to do with talking to kids. It has to do with writing letters to boards of education and legislators. Thank you.
Okay. If people have questions for Pat about the changes or updates in counter recruiting on campuses or the problem with the lead at the ROTC shooting ranges, please raise your hands by pressing number one on your phone keypad. That's number one. If not, we'll move on to the next part of his presentation. And I know that Sandy Thacker in East Bay has been doing some work on counter recruiting, and it's something that we did a lot in the past through Wilf, but the school administrations, as Pat said, have made it so very difficult to argue against this that not so many of us are doing it now. I see Nancy Price hands up. Sandy, go ahead.
Okay, just because you mentioned, yeah, I am working with a group called Before Enlisting, which is actually going into the schools and having success going into the schools and talking to high school students with bringing a vet along who talks about his experience in the war. And we also, it's a way because there's a group of high school age kids that are doing counter recruitment too in the schools in this area. And so we're going to ally with them. And I actually think it's very important for the kids themselves. I mean, I think we see that at Parkland and in a lot of places where you can underestimate how much power kids can have if they get the full picture. But they're not going to get the full picture if it's just recruiters that go on campus. And so we're trying to at least, you know, start a movement, and there are other places that are doing this, but it would be great if more people could do it, of going into high schools and talking to high school kids about what the military is actually about. And I know that the military has a lot more money to spend, but we have a right to be there too, according to the law. So anyway, I'm actually very excited about this about what we're doing.
Okay, Nancy Price, you had a comment or a question.
Yes, well, thanks, Pat. I like your focus on these four points of action, and I would love to help any of those interested in counter-recruitment and these sort of four points of action in developing an infographic card. I think it would be a terrific card to do, and let's think about it, and maybe people can get in touch with you, Sandy.
Okay.
I mean, if you're really
It's actually a little different approach that I have than Pat Elder was talking about. So
no, I understand that, but we could include yours in this kind of infographic card. I'm not saying it just has to be Pat's points,
sure,
but
sure.
I think if we had a counter recruitment card, it would be terrific. So I don't know if you want people to contact you or people could contact who.
They could contact me if they're interested in that.
Yeah. Could you just, is your email up here?
No, it's wilf@wilfeastbay.org.
Hey, Sandy, this is Pat. I applaud your work. I mean, it is is so necessary. So, you know, it's just heartwarming. There are lots of people who go into the schools, and I applaud it. So, you know, thank you for that. You know, I did a lot of it, and I just see it from a different perspective now. These guys have us outgunned, you know. I mean, we did a FOIA about 4 years ago, and we found that there were a lot of schools where, you know, recruiters were on campus more than 100 times a year.
Oh, my
God. We're outgunned, man. Although, you know, what you're doing is still saving souls, you know. So it's all good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a valuable statistic to use with schools that, you know, the recruiters are being paid to be there and therefore are able to do it so many days of the year that if we pick out, you know, just two or three days, we should be able to get that through. Pat, why don't you go ahead and talk about your more recent work on the contamination that we're seeing around military bases in the U.S. In the U.S. and foreign bases, especially in the communities that are closest to the bases, which are usually, not always, but usually economically challenged or economically depressed communities. This often means it's an example of racial injustice as well. And also, if you wouldn't mind talking a bit particularly about what the health effects are for women and children of this horrible foam.
Well, thank you. It's just horrendous. You know, this stuff is, we typically refer to it as PFAS. And PFAS, it stands for per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, okay? And there are almost 4,000 of them now. They're all cancerous. And the two most deadly are perfluorooctane sulfonate, which is PFOS, and perfluorooctanoic acid, which is PFOA. I mean, that's a hell of an alphabet soup of stuff. But it goes all the way back to 1939. Apparently, a 3M chemist in Minnesota made a mistake in the lab, and he combined eight molecules of carbon. I can tell my scientific expertise here. With, I believe, six molecules of fluoride. Okay, and he didn't realize what he'd done. He went to bed, came back the next day, and he saw this solid, you know, in his container. And he realized that he couldn't crush it. He couldn't destroy it. And he didn't realize that he had actually come across the strongest substance known to humanity. And he realized, too, that it repelled grease in a liquid form, and it could smother fire better than anything. So, you know, I always think in terms of, you know, just like the ancient Greeks and Prometheus and the, you know, the story, he brought fire to humanity, you know, from the gods. And yet it seems that that is tainted now, because the foam that's used has this PFOA in it. It just snuffs out fires. And of course the military has $100 million F-35s, and they want to be able to put those fires out in a hurry. And so they continually have their, you know, servicemen and women, you know, practicing with this white foamy stuff. And so they purposely light thousands and thousands of fires yearly at thousands of bases across the world. And they light them on fire, and they make massive flames. And then they put them out with this foam. And the foam snuffs out the flame. It's a miraculous thing. But it contaminates the soil. And we know now that women are hardest hit with this stuff. It just wipes out your entire reproductive system. And it can do so at just a few points per trillion. Per trillion. So I mean, it is just absolutely deadly stuff. We have a series of articles by Tara Kopp of Military Times. And, man, you know, she just documented it where women drank water at different military bases. And, you know, one woman put a Facebook page up. And she basically said, look, I had a miscarriage. And then another woman just said, I had two miscarriages. Another woman said, I had stillbirth. Another woman said, I had a hysterectomy. It turned out 300 women on one Facebook page at one military base, all saying they had hysterectomies and these horrendous problems and that their children's children were having problems because this stuff carries on genetically forever. And that's the other thing about this stuff, PFAS. It never breaks down. It is called the forever chemical. It is effing scary. I mean, you know, Wurtsmith Air Base, just to give you a sense, closed almost 30 years ago in Michigan. And yet the deer today that drink from the streams nearby are poisonous. And the state of Michigan has had to put an alert. There are thousands of ponds and streams and rivers and creeks that are shut down because the fish are poisonous. And it also, of course, causes testicular cancer, micropenis. It causes liver cancer, kidney cancer. I mean, this is some of the most deadly stuff. It is the most deadly thing we know of to the human race in terms of the amount of the substances necessary to poison people. You know, the military is using this stuff all over. And so typically they'll, you know, use the foam. The foam goes into the soil, and the soil then, you know, the contaminants sink into the groundwater. And municipalities use groundwater. Most municipalities use groundwater across the country, you know, for their, for their water usage. And then, of course, you have people, you know, who have wells who also, you know, just drink directly from the groundwater. So with all that going on and we've known about it, the military has known that it's poisoning people since 1974. And they're doing so all over the world. I mean, you know, in Germany, in Japan, and it's just horrendous. They've known it's been going on. In the meantime, the Environmental Protection Agency is sitting on its hands. Okay. And today, if you would just Google EPA, you'll see that the Trump administration, under its EPA chief Wheeler, basically decided not to regulate the stuff. I mean, it has never been regulated. That's part of the problem. There is no contaminant level. You know, there's no level where the feds can step in and say, hey, you've exceeded the level. You're in trouble. You have to shut down this municipal water system. That is extremely problematic because it's the military gets free license from the EPA. And you got to figure, you know, it's the military that informs EPA's decision. Look, the military has billions of dollars of potential liability. And so the EPA is not regulating the stuff. If the EPA comes in and says all of a sudden it's mandatory, 20 points per trillion, like Vermont is at 20 points per trillion. The state of Vermont says if you have PFAS in your groundwater and you're drinking it at more than 20 points per trillion, you are setting yourself up for cancer. And the EPA has an advisory at 70, but it does not enforce it. And so the military all across the country is saying to, you know, municipalities, say in New Mexico, where there are 2 million points per trillion PFAS in groundwater, and the entire state of New Mexico is suing the U.S. Air Force to say, look, you got to build new water systems. What do you want us to do? I mean, you know, so the Air Force responds by saying, we do not have to pay a penny for your municipal water systems. This is not a regulated substance. It's horrible. And we have, you know, trouble overseas as well, because overseas, the places where America has military bases are governed by SOFAs, and SOFAs are, you know, the status of force agreements. So the U.S. is an empire, and the people in, say, Germany are subjects. And so there was a little town called Wittlichland, and this was, my God, last week. And this is breaking news, guys. Real news. They sued the federal government of Germany. Long story, but real short. Wittlichland discovered that the contaminants coming out of Spangledem military base, which is a joint U.S. NATO base, is emptying this PFAS stuff into the groundwater. And so Wittlichland wanted to sue the United States government, first, to cease and desist, and second, because all of the contaminants, they go into the streams, they go into the river, sure. They're poisoning, you know, the animals, they're poisoning fish, sure. But they're also going into the sewer. So normally with sewer systems in municipalities, there's sludge that's left over. You pick up the sludge and you slather it on fields. They can't do that with PFAS, because if they put it on fields, then all of the crops that will grow will be poisonous, and all of the animals that would eat from the crops or walk on the fields or the birds that drink from the water on the fields will be poisoned. And they know it because they've done it and they've seen the death and destruction as a result. So they have to incinerate the stuff. Actually, they say they have to incinerate the stuff, which is, oh my God, horrible. I mean, it's the last thing you want to do because they don't have the technology down. They're not incinerating all of the particulate matter. And so they're raining death on people in Germany. And so it's just horrendous. And we'll have to see because, I could just – it's hard not to be, you know, sarcastic. I wonder who's going to win the court case here, you know. I mean, the little town of Wittlichland or the government of Germany. So – it's just absolutely horrible. So how much time do I have?
It's a good time to stop for Q&A. If anyone on the call has questions or comments for Pat, please press number 1 on your phone keypad now. That's number 1 on your phone keypad. This is remarkable work that he's doing, assembling all of this data from many of the bases around the world. And it's worth looking at the data and supporting his efforts to get the word out. Edith Bell, you have your hand up. Again, if anyone wants to ask a question or make a comment, press number 1 on your phone keypad. Go ahead, Edith.
Number 1, where are these bases? And number 2, since the Germans aren't all that happy with what they do, don't want nuclear weapons, do they want our bases there still? And this is poisoning.
Well, thank you. Yes?
Well, I was going to say that this is one reason that Nancy Price has been working on a infographic card that identifies the kinds of pollution that the military is getting away with. Nancy, did you want to speak to Edith's question?
Yes, well, thank you. And Pat, as always, you're able to present this in such a compelling way that I'm sure everyone listening to you wants to get involved in this. First of all, I am working on an infographic card on this topic, so I will be covering some of the material that Pat just presented.
Edith, there
are these bases all across the country, and even Pat can probably tell you the number. I'm not sure myself of the number, but about 800 of the bases across the country are already declared Superfund sites. And there's no money in the Superfund fund to begin to clean these up, even if you can clean them up. So this is really a crisis. I know many of us have gotten excited about fracking fluids in groundwater sources, but this is compounds what the impact of fracking fluids are, and so. I think you can see that this is a terrific collaboration between Wilf and Pat. We were going to have a tour with him this month in March of California branches, but for various reasons we've canceled it. But I hope to organize a tour either next fall or early next spring and really get the California branches at least engaged in Pat's work. And anybody else who would like to discuss having Pat present to your branch, I've put my email in the chat box here, nancytprice39@gmail.com. I'd like to say that it's interesting that one of the bases, Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, I don't know if his PFOA... Pat, that was contaminating their water there, but there was a lawsuit by many of the people who claimed their cancers and diseases were the result of one or another contaminant and exposure to the contaminated drinking water, and their lawsuit was defeated. They had a really good lawsuit, and they were defeated because of the military claiming they were not responsible. But interestingly enough, the impact of soldiers or the military being exposed to burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq is now getting such publicity because of the harms to their health, that the military is now recognizing that and looking at compensation. So I think if we can keep working on this particular case and also really raise this up to environmentalists who are concerned about contamination of water sources and to public health officials, we can widen the scope of organizations involved and try to really bring this to national attention. So thanks, Pat. I think as you see, Pat is an indefatigable researcher and writer.
I think, too, that it's worth saying, while we can't get Pat to visit branches for this World Water Day, there is a link on the website. There is a link on the internet, if you Google Pat Elder, to several videos where he talks about this this problem, and it's worth introducing those if you have an action or event planned for World Water Day. It would be a great reason, perhaps this year or next year for World Water Day, to work between your branch and some other organizational allies in your community who are working on water issues already, but who probably do not have their eyes on this particular problem at the moment. And even between now and World Water Day, it's a good reason to meet with those allies and bring this to their attention. And you can refer them to past information on the internet about this PFAS foam. And the number of communities surrounding military bases around the world, including our country, that are affected by it. So,
Pat, do you want to talk about the tour you're doing now?
Yeah, I do. I wanted to address, though, I don't know who made the question about Lejeune. In Lejeune, the contamination was caused predominantly by perchloroethylene, we call it PCE, and trichloroethylene and benzene. We don't know really the level of PFAS in Camp Lejeune at this point. Although, you know, again, there were 2,600 wells tested by the military across the country, and 61% showed poisonous levels of contaminants. And then again, around the world, but we're not really privy to much of the statistics there, unless, you know, municipalities test their own water and it gets into the press, and then we can report on it. But I am flying. I'll be in Kansas City talking about this stuff, you know, next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then I'm going to fly to L.A. and link up with my daughter, Holly, who's 33. And we are going to drive her her Honda CV or whatever it is across the country. And we're going to stop at 8 bases, which are the 8 most contaminated in the United States. They are China Lake, Cannon in New Mexico, Dallas, former England and Louisiana, Patrick Air Force Base in Florida, Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, and Langley. All 8 have been found to have more than a million parts per trillion. Keep in mind, you guys, Harvard University professors say that 1 part per trillion is dangerous to human health. And we're finding these 8 bases have more than a million apiece in their groundwater. Now, groundwater is not drinking water. I'll give you that, you know, but a lot of municipal systems, you know, pull from the groundwater. So we're going to take off on the 23rd. We'll be at China Lake. I've spent my day, a good part of it anyway, and Nancy's helping me a little, just sending press releases out, you know, and it's pretty crisp stuff, and hopefully we'll get a little bit of attention. But I'll stand in front of each base, you know, China Lake. I'll have a podium. The podium will have the civilian exposure website, or just the, like the logo. And I will speak for about a minute and a half in front of each one. My daughter will film me, and I will address the specifics of that base and, you know, additional items that I've picked up, you know, on the press. But all the data we have comes from the United States military. That's the irony here, you know. You can look, just Google DOD March 2018 PFAS. You know, DOD 2018 March PFAS, and there's a spreadsheet there that shows 126 bases. But there are many, many more than that. In fact, there have been several since where the municipalities have tested, not the military, but the surrounding jurisdictions, finding more than a million parts per trillion. It's
okay,
really
we have 2 questions for you, Pat. One is from Jean Versailles in New York City. Jean, go ahead. Your mic is open.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I'm very late because I was compelled to watch the pullout of Amazon from New York City, and so I'm late. And there is no chapter, there's no branch of WILF in New York City, so whatever one does, one does on one's own. Now, the question I have, and I apologize for being late and asking such a question, what is the military or why is this substance used? I think you have compelling information, but I have no idea what it's used for. And I'm trying, I've been trying to scan websites, but I still don't get a clear picture.
Okay. Well, it is the active ingredient. PFAS is the active ingredient in aqueous film-forming foam. Aqueous.
I got that. That's easy to get from a website.
Yeah, it puts out fires. It puts out fires, you know. Petroleum fires are hellacious to put out. And you can't put out a petroleum fire with, you know, with a regular hose, with water. You know, it makes it actually even worse. These are $100 million machines, and they douse the fires with this stuff that was bumped into by 3M scientists that eventually became Teflon.
So this is about, Gene, when the military does testing to make sure that if there is a plane that catches fire on takeoff or landing, that they can quickly put out the fires. And as Pat said, these planes are worth so much money that they you know, do these drills, you know, maybe monthly or even more often, to make sure that their firefighters are ready to put these fires out effectively. But all of that contaminant goes into the groundwater surrounding
that.
Yeah.
Great.
And then we have another question from Jane Doyle in Santa Cruz. Jane, go ahead and ask your question.
Yes. I'm thinking about the horrific wildfires that we've been having in the West, and I'm wondering and fearing that the CAL FIRE and other agencies will start to look on the amazing fire dousing potential of this chemical, and I'm wondering, has there been any movement in that direction, and is it something that we should be talking to people about?
No. The wildfires are big. They're not hot, and that's the key. There are other chemicals in water that are sprayed on those fires that fall way short of the properties of PFAS. PFAS is exclusively for a combination of plastics, heavy metals, and petroleum. When you take metals and petroleum together and create a blaze, you got something really hot, much magnitude, you know, tens and tens of times hotter than a pine tree going up in flames.
Just to finish, there have been serious concerns when the Paradise Fire happened and some of the others, because houses were burning that had those materials in them, and those fires were very hot. And that was why I was thinking that it might be something that, you know, we'll get fire suppression creep.
Right.
Thank you, Pat. I think we need to move on, but you'll be hearing more from Pat and this collaboration we're doing between the Disarm and Earth Democracy Committee and Pat's work.
Well, I want to say one final thing. Nancy Price has been a real shot in the arm to me. You know, I bumped into this stuff only because of the lead contamination with the JROTC program. I've been working on countering recruitment for 20 years, and I gave one presentation, and it changed my life. The counter recruitment stuff is cool, and, you know, it gets a little bit of response, but nothing like this. You start talking about hysterectomies from people that drank water. That's really compelling stuff. So, I'm wound up, you know, I'm not going anywhere and I'm on this. So love you all.
Thank you, Pat.
So this is Nancy. So this is, you know, the tobacco industry. This is the pharmaceutical industry covering up. So we know the history of cover-ups, and, I think we have a great chance with Pat's energy and commitment to, research and education, that if we focus on this, we can really get somewhere, because it really is a woman's issue. It's linked to the military. It's linked to military responsibility. It's linked to the military budget. It's linked to building a peace movement. So I think this is a wonderful nexus, and I'm very pleased to be working with Pat on this.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you, Pat.